Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at Stewart-Peterson.com.
From the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We hope that when you get the opportunity to drive here, you come and visit us at the U of I tent. It's a little warm, but it's a great show here for the next 3 days in Decatur at Progress City. You can drop by and see us anytime you'd like. During our program today, we'll talk a lot about the commodity markets. We have a whole crew with us. Steve Freed here is with ADM Investor Service, Dale Durkles from AgriVisor, and of course, Wayne Nelson is on hand with us as well. He's from L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Amy Sage is here from the Andersons. We'll talk with the corn growers, and we'll take a quick look at rural development here in the state of Illinois. That all comes up during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's take a look at what the numbers finished up like in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. From the corn pit at the CME Group, the nearby contract in the September was down 7.75 at 356. December futures at 369 were 6.25 lower. And the March contract down 6 cents at 380.25. May futures down 5.75, 387. July 5.75 lower. And December down 6.25. They finished for next year at 393.25. From the soy complex, nearby beans down 12.75 today. $8.84.75, the final price. November at 874, 13.5 lower. And January futures at 878.75, down 13.5. The March 12.75 lower at $8.81. May contract at 884, 12.5 lower. Next year's November soybeans down 13.5 at $8.70. From the soft red winter wheat, September futures were up a penny and a half at 484. July of next year, unchanged at 498. And the bean meal futures were down $3 today at 317.90. Bean oil down $5.20 at 45.80 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures from the CME Group show feeders down $1.72.5 at $200.10 per 100 pounds. That in the nearby September, October down $2.57.5 at $195.30. Live cattle futures in the October, $2.12.5 lower, $141.7.5. And December futures at $143.40 were down $2.25 cents. And lean hogs for the day finished a nickel lower at $67.97. Do drop by and see us here at the Illinois tent. We're just inside the gate, and we'd love to have you with us. Here are some of what the outside markets look like at this hour. Futures in the energy segment. Crude oil for the day at $45.32, down $3.88. Ethanol futures are a quarter down, down two-tenths of a cent, $1.46.2. And gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB, that's a dime and six-tenths lower at $1.39.2. Heating oil for the day, down 12.4 cents at $1.57.6. Diesel fuel and natural gas for the afternoon, that's 6 tenths of a cent lower at $2.69.5. Dow Jones Industrial Average now shows that we are currently down 392 points at 16,116. U.S. dollar is down 0.4, that's at 95.44. And gold futures for the day are currently trading at $1,141 even. They're up $9. Once you arrive at the Farm Progress Show, you can turn to your right once you come inside the main gate. Go about a block, you'll find us here at the U of I tent. We're on stage during the 2 o'clock hour for the closing market report. And, of course, in the morning you can visit with Orion Samuelson. He takes the stage. That time is at 10 a.m. in the morning. Throughout the day, you can visit with all the folks that are here at the U of I tent, especially if you happen to have a student, drop by and see us, and you'll be able to talk with folks about all the majors that are offered by the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Again, that's at the Farm Progress Show. We're in Decatur, and it's a Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Oh, good afternoon. It's Tutt Gleason here at the University of Illinois. Thanks so much for the audience being here. We appreciate you dropping by to see us at the closing market report, the U of I tent. We're going to go through a little bit of what's been happening in the marketplace. Wayne Nelson is usually with us on Tuesday. We have a few others on stage with us as well. Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Dale Durkles from AgriVisor from Bloomington, Illinois, and from Chicago, ADM Investor Services. Steve Freed is here. Thanks all of you for being with us. Wayne, let's start with you. Give me sort of your play on the market at this point, what farmers should be thinking, doing, if anything. We're within, well, as you told me today, right now, the beginning of harvest.
We are in the beginning of harvest, Todd, and I tell you, we run into a few farmers out there, and unfortunately, the start we're seeing in sort of north central Indiana isn't very good. They're down 70 bushels from last year in the same field on some corn. But, you know, as we're looking here, we had the Asian flu. It's caught in the market here. The way that the Asian stock markets went, it's pulled us on down. And I think it's time to sit back and wait a little bit and see what these yields are going to be, because I see lower yields, at least in the eastern part of the country.
Dale, can you tell me a little bit about the Chinese economy, how it's been impacting the marketplace? He mentioned Asian flu, of course. That's the economic downturn that's happened in China. In particular, it has played havoc in the soybean market.
Well, you know, the one thing we all have to appreciate about China is that we are talking about they potentially missing a growth target. And that seems to be lost on a lot of people, and that, you know, we aren't going to grow at 7%, maybe it's 6%, maybe even it's 5.5%, but it's still growth. You know, the big issue going on in China right now is more than anything in their equity market, and when you look at the Chinese economy compared to the capitalization in their stock markets, it's about 8%, versus here in the U.S., our stock markets are about 40% or lower the capitalization of our whole economy. So it's more of a psychological issue right now than it is a real fundamental structural issue.
Does that give you a hope for the future of the soybean market?
I think it really does, yet. The biggest thing you have to be a little bit concerned about with the bean market itself is, you know, the demand for bean meal because of the liquidation of part of their hog herd this last year. And so that's going to be displaced somehow. But if they import pork, it means we're going to have demand for the protein coming elsewhere in the world, too. So, you know, maybe it doesn't go to China. Maybe it goes to elsewhere. But I still think the overall demand base is pretty constructive.
Steve Freed, what do you suppose imports of U.S. beans to China will look like for the marketing year? Will they meet USDA's current estimate?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me. Secondly, I think the market feels that no, we won't reach our target of exports. I think a couple of reasons. I think number one is that South America has, pick a number, 12 million, maybe 10 million tons more beans now than it did a year ago. And also, Chinese reserves, they've got 3 million tons more beans than they do a year ago. So they may take 80 million tons, but that share could be more out of South America than the U.S.
Over the last week and a half, I've begun to hear some analysts talk about $7 cash beans. Would you be in that group?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that prices right now, if the demand does slow and the government doesn't make a dramatic change on the crop report, I think prices are overvalued. But I don't think it goes that low simply because, you know, the farmer won't sell it. And I think that we still have good, strong crush demand. We're crushing a record amount of beans in August. We'll probably crush a record amount in September. And, you know, the Argentina election is critical for the soybean market. And if all those things kind of play out, I really don't see the need to take beans down to that level.
For those who don't know, and I may be among that list, why is it that the Argentina election is so critical for the soybean market?
Well, the existing party right now has a small edge in the election, but the opposing party would probably come in and devaluate their currency by as much as 35%. And so the Argentine farmer has been kind of holding beans back in storage, maybe not as much as what the USDA is saying, or maybe not as much as what the market is saying. But if he decides to sell that on the currency devaluation, that makes more meal available to the marketplace and would compete with our meal exports.
Right. So just for broader understanding, whole soybeans generally do not come out of Argentina, but
no,
mostly bean meal, right?
They're the number one exporter of meal in the world. They crush most of their beans, and they like to have that value-added product to sell for their export taxes.
And most oftentimes, I believe that their largest importer would be China as well?
Most of their meal goes to Europe, and so the Brazilian beans go to China, but most of the meal goes to Europe from Argentina.
Okay. So we've heard a lot about the soybeans, and I haven't asked Dale, but I don't think, Dale, you're not in the $7 camp, right? No, I didn't think so. Wayne, are you in the $7 camp?
No, I don't think so, and for the same reasons
so
that Dale said.
So why is it that I'm hearing about $7 beans? I've got three folks here that,
well,
I hear about it.
They want to scare people a little bit. And let's face it, you know, as you look at a chart nowadays, they project downward. You know, when it goes zoop, 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 stepping down, people look at what a chart projects to, and they say numbers like that. Somebody like Dan Zwicker would say something like that. You know, that it projects down to
that. He's not here to protect himself.
You know, Hyo Silver just died. I don't know. You know? But, you know, Dan, my good buddy Dan would say the chart does project to this. And that would be where you'd hear some of that.
And actually,
my
Dan
other buddy,
did
Mike
Suslow,
might
week.
Say that, too. So, I mean, a chartist will say some of that. That doesn't mean that they believe that. As we all know, Dan's bullish 92% of the time. But he will tell you where the bottom of the chart is.
He might listen to this later. I bet he hears about it. Well, okay, so let's switch gears real quickly. Corn market, your current take on it.
Well, we're going to be under pressure. I mean, we're looking, we're talking, and we see that the government, most of the independents have got us up, basically balancing the West, balancing the East, pouring us out that way. We've got plenty of corn. We've got a good carry out, and the market's going down. We don't have a lot of business, and but I have to go along with what other guys are saying that, you know, under 350, the farmers shut the door.
I think in corn, you could almost have the same type of trading pattern as a year ago, in that I think if the farmer stores a lot of this crop, we could see a post-harvest rally in corn. I don't think we're going to get to the levels that the farmer would like for us to get to, especially in areas where the crops are down from average. And then at the beginning of the year, we start trading next year's crops, which you always have to start out normal, which might be lower prices, because we do have a lot of global stocks of everything. In the beans, I think that we might be under pressure early, and then we'll see what happens to South America in 2016 and what happens to our weather here and also in 2016. So I look for corn prices to try to stage a post-harvest rally, and I look for bean prices to go lower from here initially.
You know, the thing I keep going back to is that, you know, we're in a window this fall for a two-year low in the beans. We put in a three-year low last year, and so they're really pretty much paints an open picture going forward. I don't know what's going to be the fundamentals, but there just seems to be something brewing out there that's going to give us a change in structure. Short term, yeah, I think we stay weak at this point in time. But you go back and you look at the experience in 8, 9, 10, and 11, you know, we really never stayed under 9 long. And if we got under 8.5, we didn't stay at under long. Then we really, it took us to get under 8, it took the economic demise at the end of 08, 09. So I think beans, you know, really where we're getting down here in the 8s are pretty fair value. I think we get a low in place here around the end of Sep and early October. I think we're going to rally beans. Don't know why yet. Maybe the crop isn't as big as people think. I also have concerns about the corn in the same fashion. I think the October crop report is huge this year. If it turns out like 2010s did, which trimmed the yield by 5 bushel, and I can build an argument that that happens, that creates a whole different playing field going into the end of the calendar year.
Dale Durkel, Steve Fried, Wayne Nelson, thank you so much. We appreciate them. Give them a nice round of applause for being with us this afternoon. Here on the Closing Market Report, we're live from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. We're in the U of I tent. You can come by and see us anytime you'd like. We're just inside the main gate and to the right. You're looking for West Avenue and 3rd Street. Joining us now on stage is Roger Syme. He's with the Illinois Corn Growers and a farmer. Thank you so much, Roger, for being with us. What's on the top policy list for the Illinois corn growers?
Well, other than profitability, which these gentlemen spelled out very well for us, $7 beans do scare us as well as $3.50 corn. But that's what we're working on. We're trying to work with all the issues we have. The waters of the U.S. and nutrient management issues are very high on our list right now. Ethanol, we're starting to see some revitalization there. We're seeing some of the different sources come together from the automobile through the people that sell the product. So we've got a lot going on there right now. We need some help with the renewable fuel standard, no doubt about that. You know, they came in with all those lower numbers and with a potentially pretty good crop. Even though we do have a lot of poor areas, we still could have some good corn out there. So we're going to have a lot to do something with.
Waters of the U.S. or Waters of the United States, or WOTUS we sometimes refer to, and the nutrient management plans are paired together. They're two different sides of the same issue. One of them is regulation, and the other one is, boy, we hope you don't regulate us, so we're going to try to work to clean up some of what's coming out of the tile lines on our farms.
Water of the U.S. is huge. If you've seen the maps that they came out with at the federal level, you know, it's worse than taking med school and looking at all the arteries and veins going through. There's places that haven't had water in them for years that are listed as water carriers in that. And you're exactly right when it comes to the nutrient management. We're working even at the more local level, Sangamon County over here and Vermilion County in particular. Both those water supplies have experienced some problems. So we've got testing going on there. We have people working with the corn growers office now that are going out taking samples, finding out just how much is nitrogen, how much phosphorus and potash are actually out there. Even in our tent here today, we've already had over 70 people bring in water samples from their own ditches, catching them from their own tiles, and they want to find out, am I part of this problem, or is there something I can do differently, whether it's filter strips, whether it's injecting, whether it's waiting till the spring of the year to put on the nitrogen and other nutrients. The farmers are willing to do this. We're willing to make the changes, and we have worked on it. But it seems like a lot of times they don't think that our volunteerism is really going far enough.
Let's wrap that up, wrap up with that thought. I talked with Tricia Braid last week from the Corn Growers just a little bit about what you're doing here on the Farm Progress Show site. Water samples can be brought in from tile lines. What do farmers do?
You just go out, you take yourself a nice clean container. It can be a plastic bag, it can be a glass jar. Catch that sample. Try to get it as close to the time as you're coming in, or if you get it the day before, put it in your refrigerator, keep it cool. Bring it to the Corn Grower tent, which is over on 3rd Street near the west side, and have a setup there where they can test the water and immediately tell you what is in that, how much percentage of nitrogen, of potash, whatever the problem may be, or if there is a problem.
Trying to get a baseline, and it's completely confidential. You're not keeping the numbers.
No, it's strictly yours. They'll tell you what the number is, and then that's it. Like I said, we have enough testing going on, and as you know, the university is testing. We're working with the Council of Best Management Practices. They've got things going on. So there is a lot of people involved with this right now. We definitely don't want to see something like went on in Maryland, some of the problems they had in Iowa at the local level with water supplies. If we can be ahead of the game, if we can show we're willing to work with it, show we're willing to make the changes, I think that'll go a long way with the consumers.
Thank you so much, Roger. Roger Syme, of course, is with the Corn Growers, and he's a farmer here in the great state of Illinois. If you're listening and you're coming to the Farm Progress Show, please do, if you're a farmer, go out to the tile line, grab an 8-ounce plastic bottle and fill that up. If you really want better numbers, you can run a flow test as well. Just put a 5-gallon bucket underneath the tile line and count the number of seconds and record that. Bring the 8 ounces with you and the number of seconds, and they'll give you some really good information from the four corn growers. Thank you, Roger, for dropping by. Also with us this afternoon here on site is Colleen Callahan. Now, Colleen Callahan, many of you may recognize as a farm broadcaster in the past, but she's been politically active for a while. She is currently the director of the Illinois Rural Development Agency, and she's here to talk about rural development. What does Illinois Rural Development do, Colleen? What kind of budget do you have?
Well, USDA Rural Development is designed to help meet the needs of our rural communities. We have 43 different funding programs. I call us a financial facilitator. We have loans and grants, not for production agriculture, but for that town that you may call home, and you may not live in the town because you're proud to live on the farm outside the town, but yet that's where you consider your address, your home, where your kids go to school, where you hopefully may still have a grocery store. And so our programs are to help meet the needs of housing. What do you do when you retire? And you may want to move into town, but what's there but another great big old farmhouse? Well, maybe that community needs some senior housing. It could be duplexes. It could be assisted living. Maybe the community needs a new fire truck, maybe a storm siren. There are no rainy day funds anymore. And so the programs that we have are designed to help meet community needs in business programs, community facilities, and housing and water and waste. And to what Roger was just talking about, some of that water may end up in a municipality, and there may need to be sewage treatment plants. And the funding that we have helps put in that kind of infrastructure, which is so sorely needed today, because most of those water lines and the water towers and the water treatment plants were built in the 30s, and they're worn out. And so it's millions of dollars, and these loans are 40-year loans at the lowest interest rates in history.
How big's the budget?
The portfolio in Illinois alone is over $4 billion. It's $4.3 billion right now. That's just in Illinois. Last year, we were able to invest in our rural communities about $600 million. That's about $1.3 million every day throughout rural Illinois. The entire USDA rural development budget is over $200 billion, which is larger than the World Bank.
That is a big budget, and it does good works?
Absolutely. There are loans and grants, and admittedly, there are fewer grant programs and availabilities than there are these very low-interest loans. But the grants that are available are based upon the poverty level, based upon the average household income in a community. So there is grant money out there. It's just that we have to work through the system and the process to determine eligibility for that money.
Who gets to apply and how do they do it?
Any community. It depends on if it's a community facility need. Those are for not-for-profits and municipalities. If it's in our business programs, those are for-profits. So let's say that there is a business located in a rural community and it's done very well. It needs a new piece of equipment in order to expand to meet demand. They go to the local bank and the bank says, we believe in you, it's good, but it seems a little risky to us. If USDA Rural Development will guarantee that loan at 80%, we're in. So we can guarantee that loan looking at the same financials that the bank looks at. And it helps the bank. Our community banks don't have a lending limit that can compete with some of the larger banks in larger locales. What helps the bank is that only 20% then of that loan goes on their books because we've assumed the responsibility for 80% of it. So they still get to utilize that money that they have. And to the borrower, it means that the bank usually extends the life of the loan and also reduces the interest rate oftentimes. So those are the business programs. The value-added producer grant, here in this tent, we're talking about local foods. And so our value-added producer grant can help do a feasibility study, and then if it shows that it is a feasible project, it means that there is funding available again. And this is grant money that does need to be matched by that borrower, but it furthers the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative. And then housing is our biggest program, including farm labor housing.
Colleen Callahan, thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Being
Thanks
with
for
us.
Asking.
Colleen Callahan is the director of the Rural Development Agency here in Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. When we come back, we'll talk with Amy Sage and Tommy Grisoffi a bit more about the marketplace. I'm live from the Farm Progress Show. Really glad to be here and hope you come out to visit us tomorrow or Thursday. We're at 3rd Street and West Avenue.
All right. It's National Cherry Popover Day. Modern-day cherry production began in the mid-1800s when a Presbyterian missionary living in northern Michigan planted cherry trees, and much to the surprise of other farmers, the trees flourished. It's also St. Verana's Day, patron of millers. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, J.J. Wood patented a plow with interchangeable parts. In 1826, Alfred Eli Beach was born, an American inventor. He also was publisher of Scientific American magazine. In 1906, Carl August Fokers was born. He was the first to isolate vitamin B12. By the way, Fokers was born in Decatur, Illinois, and he graduated from the University of Illinois in 1928 with a degree in chemistry. In 1914, Martha, the last surviving passenger pigeon, died at the Cincinnati Zoo, the species having been commercially hunted to extinction. And in 1940, Lillian D. Wald died. She was a scientist and nurse, and known as the Angel of Henry Street, where in New York, she directed for more than four decades the Henry Street Visiting Nurse Service. Among her activities, she helped initiate the enactment of pure food laws in the U.S. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Grain analyst segment specialist, that's Amy Sage. She's with the Andersons. Thanks for coming over today, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about what you expect going into this harvest season. Are you going to have a bigger draw area? Are you going to really have to compete for corn or soybeans? What are the expectations?
Yep, so we do have some areas, fortunately, around us that look like they're going to be pretty good, a little less than what hopes initially were in July, particularly to the south and right around the elevator. There's some really good-looking corn out there. To the east, though, which we do draw quite a bit from, obviously, that's been the hot topic. Closer you get to Indiana and into Indiana, they're suffering pretty bad. So that will affect our draw, and we're going to have to be aggressive to make sure that we make up for that volume.
How much last year did you put on the ground, and how much this year do you think you will be putting on the ground? I was there and saw you had it prepped.
Yep. So we had close to 4 million last year, about 3.8. We had it in the parking lot, if anybody remembers. So this year, we actually are planning on maybe using the back pile, probably not anticipating having to put as much on the ground as last year, obviously not looking at the same size crops. So, but we'll do what we have to do to keep the doors open. So, but I'm thinking probably maybe 2/3 of that.
Okay, so I have to ask this now, and I know you won't have an answer, but are you going to have a half-off drying special?
You and everybody else have to ask that right now.
All right, Tommy Grisafi is here. I'm not going to even make you answer that question. Tommy Grisafi is here. He's with Advanced Trading out of Bloomington Normal. Thanks, Tommy, for
being with us.
You come from DeMott, Indiana. You're in one of the hardest hit areas, if I remember correctly, there in the northwestern part of the state. What do crops look like in your area?
Well, I can say we won't have any piles there, that's for sure. So they're just not looking too good. They had a rough start. We had 28 inches of rain in Jasper County in June, and some of the local dairies were chopping for silage, and they thought it was about 50 bushel corn. The beans, on the other hand, look pretty good. So,
does this give you rose-colored glasses for prices? Because we're awfully low.
When I leave my house and drive to the Board of Trade, and I look at that nasty corn, it makes me bullish. But when my customers call from Minnesota and Iowa, it sets me back in line. They're actually calling because they want to hedge more bushels or price more bushels. And so parts of the country have the bushels, parts of the country don't. Where we end up with the final number, I'm not sure. What scares me or what I question is who can afford to buy our grain. So I looked at the Dow Jones before I came on the stage. We were down 460 in the Dow Jones. So whether we have a 164 yield or 158 yield, you have to have a customer who needs to buy that grain and can afford to pay for that grain. And those are my concerns.
So your biggest concern is not about supply at this point, but the ability for the end user to buy.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Tommy.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being with us. Amy Sage, thank you so much as well. That wraps up this closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to drop by and see us or visit our website, either one. We're here on the Farm Progress Show site on 3rd Avenue and West, or 3rd Street and West Avenue. And, of course, you can visit us at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. We post all of our programming, including this one, not long after it airs on our radio stations.